The following episode of Bitch Propaganda was recorded on Thursday, November 12th at the Bitch headquarters in Portland, Oregon. Just a note for our listeners, some of the language in the following podcast might be considered a bit questionable, including the word bitch, of course. All right, welcome back to another episode of Bitch Propaganda. It's like The View, but with less diet tips. I'm Kelsey Wallace, the web editor at Bitch, and with me today are...
I'm Joanna Widener, a contributing writer.
I'm Sarah Rehani, the editorial intern.
And here today on Propaganda, we're going to start by talking about the non-complaining project on the Double X Factor website. And the project is basically the idea of Jessica Gross and Hannah Rosen, two editors at Double X, to try to go an entire month without complaining about anything. And they started at the beginning of, or actually mid-October. They've had 3 weeks so far of their non-complaining project. And they were inspired originally by the reports that came out in September that since the 70s, women in America have become less and less and less happy. So, Joanna, do you want to start us off with, first of all, do you think women actually are less happy? And if so, why?
You know, it's probably a difficult thing to quantify whether, I mean, happiness seems like a weird thing to try to even count up. But I am, like, so irritated by that the whole freaking thing that I just could explode. Like, I think this sort of obsession with women having to be happy in the first place, like, I don't really understand that. And I also think there's so many different reasons for a woman to be unhappy nowadays. This is totally depressing. I don't mean it to be.
Women are unhappy for a good reason.
But there are many reasons. And I think that this sort of weird knee-jerk reaction where it's all of a sudden like, oh, it's because of feminism. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me.
No.
And also I think it may be because of feminism in the sense that that feminism has brought awareness to people, to women, that they are treated unfairly and treated in certain oppressive ways. And yeah, that does make you unhappy to find that out and to figure that out.
And angry and other unladylike emotions.
Exactly.
Yeah, but it's not bad. I will share that a friend of mine got kicked out of a bar a few weeks ago because a guy next to her, who apparently she had seen him like hitting on other women earlier in the night, he came up to her and was like, smile! And she threw her drink right in his face.
Yes.
And I mean, who hasn't, like, it made me so happy, even though she had to like go wait in the car for everyone else, because... You know, who has not experienced, like, some asshole being like, hey, what about a smile? Give us a smile.
You look pretty if you smile.
But it's just, I mean, you know, Joanna, it's just like you were saying, where we as women are expected to be happier. And I'm not saying, I mean, the study dealt with men also and said that men actually have stayed about the same over, you know, since the 70s, maybe gotten a tiny bit happier, actually. But... You know, my brother, my boyfriend, like, guys, my guy friends don't seem to get that. Like, hey, smile. Give us a smile. You know, I don't think the public at large expects men to look cheerful and happy and
like,
feel great about it.
Yeah, like, you wouldn't say that to a guy in a bar.
No.
That would just be idiotic.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's weird. I can't imagine going up to a guy and saying, your facial expression is not what I'm expecting. Change it.
Yeah, and it's from strangers. I mean, I've gotten that from... more strangers than people that I actually know. And so ridiculous, which is why the Non-Complaining Project kind of was launched. And I think I know Jessica via email a little bit. I don't really even know Hannah except just through reading Double X. But I would guess that they would agree with a lot of what we're saying about just feeling just pissed off at the expectations of women.
They describe themselves as, like, very complainy people.
Yeah, kind of grouchy.
It's really part of their personalities, it seems.
Right, which is why they kind of challenged themselves, like, okay, you know, they were reading this literature, these self-help books about taking control of your own happiness, and they even downloaded these iPhone apps to make them happier throughout the day, and basically they're giving it a try. So, I don't know, Sara, do you think you could go without complaining for an entire month?
I think it would negatively affect many of my friendships, which it's a little bit weird to think that a lot of my friendships are founded on complaining, but when I was reading the Double X articles, I realized that, I mean, they have the same problem, where they have a couple friends who just, they launch into office gossip mode, and I definitely have friends who all you do is just, like, talk about people you hate, and when you think about it, it's kind of bad, but it's still really fun.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could go without complaining. I feel like... I would have less to talk about. That makes me feel weird.
Well, but I mean, I think you're bringing up a good point, which is that, you know, for a lot of people, relationships are built on this kind of complaining that, I don't want to say that it's not serious, but I mean, a lot of the complaining
like,
that
really
I do,
complaining.
Like yesterday, I was going crazy about how much I can't stand John Gosselin from John and Kate Plus 8. And now, who would have ever thought that he could be more annoying solo than he was as a part of the show, but he is, you know? It's like, get out of my face, John Gosselin. I don't want to see it, you know? I can't imagine what my office life here at Bitch would be without being able to say stuff like that and, you know, just venting. And I guess I don't use the term complaining, which is maybe how I feel like I'm getting away with it more or something. I'm like, oh, venting, ranting.
I think really, like, nothing unites people more than a common hatred. And when I meet someone, I usually feel more comfortable talking to them about something we both hate than something we both like. I don't know why it's so, gives me this warm, fuzzy feeling to just hate on stuff.
I guess the question, though, that they're asking at XXX is that a healthy basis or a fruitful basis for existence? But
right.
I still don't, I don't understand the connection between what the folks at XXX are doing and the studies that have been, I mean, I kind of do, but like, I don't understand what the point is, really.
I think the idea is that complaining less is going to make them happier because they're not spending as much time thinking about the things that make them unhappy, which I understand, but I also think that a lot of the complaining that we do in a social context is really not that important. You know, like when you complain about John Gosselin, like he's really annoying. But really, it doesn't make that much a difference.
No, and I'm not, like, inherently unhappy about his Funny or Die videos, so I don't, you know, I don't think that I'm a less happy person because I'm dwelling on those negative thoughts, but there are certainly some experts that, you know, have been featured in the Non-Complaining Project who would say, actually, no, you know, anytime...
You'd be happier if you just didn't think or speak about John Gosling.
Yeah, I mean, anytime that you're kind of dwelling on the negative, you're just kind of bringing down your whole mood. And it's better to just focus on the positive. But, you know, on the other hand, they feature also in this project the new Barbara Ehrenreich book, Bright Sighted, which I wish that I had read it by now. I haven't had a chance to, but I've seen a few interviews with her. And it's basically kind of about that idea that, like, oh, never complain. Just focus on the positive. And she was inspired to write the book because she was diagnosed with breast cancer about 8 years ago, and all these people were like, just look at the bright side, you know? You can, if you just keep positive, you can beat this thing. And it's like, that's, you know, complaining project aside, that's total bullshit,
right.
You know?
And it's this, I feel like that book and also a lot of the criticism of maybe this Non-Complaining Project is this idea that you're not allowed to be sad, which kind of ties in with the whole people telling you to smile thing. And, I mean, obviously everyone wants to be happier, but you can't be happy all the time. And the idea that not complaining is going to make all the bad things that you dislike better. I mean, just because you don't complain about it doesn't mean that it doesn't suck.
Right, and then are you living somehow like a less authentic existence because you're ignoring anything that is negative?
That displeases you, yeah. And if you don't complain about... I feel like if you don't complain about things that don't matter that much, it lessens your incentive to complain about things that actually do matter and things that that it'll actually make a difference if you complain.
Right. And I mean, obviously here we are, you know, recording this from the offices of a pop culture criticism magazine, so I think it's safe to say that we value a critical lens. But I mean, you know, go ahead and call me like an unhappy crank if you want, but I don't think that I, A, could give up complaining for a month, nor B, do I choose to try. I mean, I don't even want to try. Like, I don't think it's a bad thing, and maybe I am one of those women who's less happy now than I would have been in the 70s, but I don't know.
Maybe that's just
I don't
because
care.
Ignorance is bliss.
Well, I guess I still don't quite get, like, what the connection to feminism is for people who are making this jump that, like, women, like, if you complain less and you'll be happier.
I think it maybe stems from the fact that, like, through, and this is a stretch because they didn't directly connect it to feminism, because, you know, no offense XXX, but they're not as feminist as I think they could be. I guess I would say the connection could be drawn between this idea that, you know, since the late 60s, early 70s, women have been given this much more agency, you know, our opinions have been valued more highly in public settings like XX blog, mm-hmm. and our complaints have maybe increased because people are listening to us more mm-hmm. than they used to. I mean, you know, I'm just speculating because I wasn't alive in the 60s, but my guess is that while people probably weren't that much happier, maybe women just like bitched less in mm-hmm. public.
Yeah, and I feel like in, especially in the 50s and 60s, it was a lot less socially acceptable to complain, especially to anyone outside your own family.
Right, I mean, to write like a, really. You know, an op-ed piece for the New York Times, it was like, life sucks, and here's why, you yeah. know? And so the fact that we have the right to do that now, I mean, maybe the argument is that, like, well, maybe that's not a good thing, because...
I think the other connection to feminism is that since women have more choices now about what they can do and what they can say, it's more stress, and that makes people unhappy. And that's, like, that... What's that book called?
Second Shift?
No, it's called, like, Why Less is More. I think it's called The Paradox of Choice, yeah. : Why Less is More. And then it has a little picture of a carton of eggs on the cover. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, that's about how more choices make us more stressed, which makes us less happy.
Right. And that is kind of the root of how some people are framing feminism as being like the culprit as yeah. why women are less happy is because...
That's why pro-choice is bad.
Yeah. We've got more choice now. And, you know, I mean, kind of bringing in the second shift, like we've got so many more responsibilities as women that we're less happy because there are more areas of our lives where we can feel like we're not measuring up.
That's yeah. such bullshit because it's like women are sad, are more sad because they have more responsibility and they just can't handle it.
Right, you know? Exactly.
Like, what?
It's infantilizing and it's also, I don't know, I mean, I think it's ignoring the root of the problem, which is that women are still held responsible for the childcare and domestic mm-hmm, life yeah. and work.
Every other issue of Time, it seems, the cover story mm-hmm. is women and the work-life balance or the child's yeah. work balance. I mean, there's no attention paid to the fact that, to the very foundation of that issue, which is why are women expected to take on both of these really full responsibilities entirely on their own.
Right. It's like, maybe men are still happier because they can just get a wife and then check that off the list.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Maybe men are happier because they're not expected to spend all their time organizing this work-home balance and they can get away with a lot more.
Right. And feel kind of like they're succeeding as men in society at a better rate.
Even because... though they're not stay-at-home dads.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, and I think it is just, it's complicated, and my hope is that throughout a few more decades, some of the kind of expectations will die away. Because what it feels like to me is that while our choices have increased, the expectations have not really changed, you know? And it's,
right, right.
It's there's like, the expectation that because you have more choice, you're supposed to do 6 things at once instead of be able to choose. Which
right.
is the point of choice.
Yeah. Which is
it's like now you can just have more but yeah. that you're failing at.
It's yeah. also just so nuts to just go straight to the draw the conclusion very quickly that women are less happy because it's because of feminism. I just think that's so bonkers.
It's totally bonkers, but it also, I mean, and I hate to be like the feminist conspiracy theorist, but it's like, oh, just another chance for you to try to undermine feminism.
Yeah.
You being the mass media, hence the conspiracy theory.
There's definitely like this idea that like, oh, you feminists are always complaining, and you would be a lot happier if you didn't complain. And I mean, that's the basis behind the Non-Complaining Project, really, which is like, the idea that not complaining makes you happier seems in one light to make a lot of sense, and then in another light just seems completely stupid.
Well, and especially if you take it to, like, the realm of social justice, if we're talking yeah. about feminism. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, I wish Martin Luther King would have just stopped that complaining.
Right, yeah. exactly.
Don't whine yeah. about racism. I mean, you know, it's...
Yeah, you know, if you don't whine about racism, it'll just go away.
Right. If, I wish you could just be happy. Smile. You know, so...
Just smile, Dr. King.
Obviously, it's kind of whack when you take it to the level of any kind of political yeah. sphere. So I mean, my kind of one sentence take on the Non-Complaining Project is, you know, it's interesting, but it's not realistic, nor is it something I think we should strive for.
But I also think if you're gonna take the effort to do something for a month, there's a lot more productive ways to try to make yourself happy than stopping complaining. If you're doing it from a feminist perspective, which XX purports to be, at least from a women's perspective.
Right, and I don't think that they are you know, going at it in, like, a all-encompassing way that has to do with, you know, women's rights the way they could, you know, I think
it's a lot more about their personal, like, how do I stop whining? And there is definitely a difference between complaining and whining. You know, criticism, I think, can be put under the umbrella of complaint, but whining is just stuff that, I don't know. What do you think?
I guess I'd call it more of a dwelling on an issue. I mean, nobody likes a whiner, you know, if you're just going to sit around and be like, but you guys, John Gosselin won't go away from the internet. It's like, okay.
But John
Gosselin. But speaking of the internet, we'll shift topics just a little bit. And there have been a couple, well, at least three different kind of catastrophe fiascos in the media the past week or so. Of teenagers getting censored for their outfits. And the first one that we could talk about is, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, Geese Arruda, a 20-year-old college student in Sao Paulo, Brazil, who was expelled from school for wearing a mini dress. And then since the expulsion has been reinstated, although the last I checked, she hasn't actually resumed attending classes. But our very own editor, Andy, was on World Have Your Say yesterday talking about this, so I'll include a link to that on our blog. And I don't know, did anyone read about Geese? Like, do you think that the principal of the school, or I guess it's not a principal when we're talking about a college, like the dean, had any reason to do this? I mean, the school is saying that, you know, that it was a distraction, that it was a problem, that people were catcalling her and taking video of her and taking photos, and they expelled her because it was a distraction to the other students.
So they didn't expel any of the students who were taking videos of her skirt?
No.
Well, there's a problem right there.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty clear problem. I guess there were over 130 different videos posted on YouTube of her.
Yeah, I mean, did they pull her aside ever and say anything to her in the meantime? Which still would have been inappropriate, but like, did they just go straight to expelling her?
Well, their argument is that, as far as I know, no. It sounds like their argument was that they're not expelling her for what she was wearing, but for her behavior, because apparently she was, you know, drawing attention to herself on purpose by going into classrooms and, like, they said, like, wiggling in her miniskirt to get people to catcall her, which she denies, and which sounds like a load of crap to me.
Yeah, it sounds ludicrous.
And, I mean, regardless, even if she was doing that,
It doesn't seem to warrant expulsion.
No, I think it's exactly like you said, Sarah. If there are 130 different students taking videos and photos of her and catcalling her and yelling at her on campus, what about those people?
Why aren't they getting in trouble for what is clearly sexual harassment?
Yeah, absolutely. And she's on university property. Like, she should be protected somehow under the school policy.
I mean, there is the fact that apparently this was a private school and they have a dress code, and if that's the case, then if she had been punished, it should have been for wearing a skirt that was too short for dress code. And I mean, like, a private school has the right to institute as stupid a dress code as they want, you know, and
if they require a knee-length skirt, then they should tell her to go home and put on a knee-length skirt,
yeah,
and should be the end of it.
I mean, it doesn't make sense to expel her for, I don't know, dancing or whatever in the skirt. I mean, if she's going to receive punishment, it should be for the length of the skirt. And, I mean, that's reasonable if that's the school rule. But it still seems, like, way too much for expulsion.
I'm also curious, have these people never seen a miniskirt before? Like,
I know.
Am I the only one who is, like, Brazil? Yeah. Maybe I've got the wrong idea.
All the comments on the World Have Your Say thing were like, since when does Brazil care about modesty?
Like, isn't it nude beaches and a lot of hot people?
And
like,
they named that waxing after the country, so.
So the mini dress doesn't seem new, but, you know, I think this also brings to mind, there's a case going on where the ACLU is suing a principal of a high school in Indiana. The high school, I believe it's pronounced Churubusco. It's like near Indianapolis. And two sophomore girls over the summer had a sleepover where they took, like, you know, girly sexy photos.
I have to say, I really love the quote that I read in the ABC News article that was like the legal document describing what the photos looked like. Just imagine this really stodgy lawyer was being like, the girls had purchased a novelty fellowship lollipop.
Yeah, Yeah, they like licked a lollipop and they were wearing little pajamas and they took photos of each other.
They took really like Miley type, I'm pulling up my shirt a little bit, photos.
Like just girly kind of, you know, naughty photos of themselves at this sleepover, and they put them on MySpace.
It should be clarified that none of it was, there was no nudity and there was no, no. I mean, it could not be classified as child pornography.
No, it was just like kind of, you know, girls trying
like,
to
look,
be.
Look, it's my midriff.
Yeah, mm-hmm. A little sexy. And they put it on their MySpace pages, which were such a private, only their friends could see the photos. But obviously, somebody who wasn't their friend saw them because they printed them out and gave them to the school principal, an anonymous tip artist.
MySpace, a place for tattletale.
And the principal, Austin Couch, suspended the girls from all extracurricular activities for a year because they were giving a bad reputation to the school.
Whatever happened to, like, sitting down with somebody and talking to them about what, like...
They did have to go to counseling because of it.
Oh, wait, actually, apparently he suspended them from all extracurricular activities, but then changed it because they were like, but we're athletes. So he changed it to, well, I guess you can resume 25% of your former extracurricular activities.
The whole thing is so arbitrary, and to me, all it is like, as an adult male, I'm uncomfortable with the fact that I was titillated by this. So I'm gonna
giant boner.
Yeah, I'm gonna punish you because I'm embarrassed about my hard-on over photos. And it's just, you know, they were outside of school, they were just doing, I mean, you know, they were doing pretty typical teenage girl sleepover behavior, yeah. You know?
I mean, like, in my opinion, it's a really stupid thing to do to post any, even, you know, to post any sexual photos of yourself on the internet. That's my personal opinion. Like, there's no legal problem here. You know, it's not pornography, it's not... I don't know, in a school publication?
It was a completely separate issue from school. It has no business being in the school. And of course, the most ironic thing here is that the whole reason why Principal Couch suspended them was because he didn't want them giving the school a bad name, but none of us would have ever heard of Churubusco High School if it wasn't for that, you know, asshole who decided to suspend them. It's like, who's giving the school a bad name? You are, dude.
Now, is there any argument that's... that could possibly be made for supporting what the concept behind what he did?
I can't see Principal Austin Couch's argument here, but there was an article in the New York Times over the weekend called "Can a Boy Wear a Skirt to School?" by Jan Hoffman that was about these dress codes throughout the country and how schools all over the place are running into the problem of saying no short skirts for girls, and then a boy wears a short skirt to school and they're not sure what to do about it, or, you know, kind of appropriate dress, and then trying to decide, well, is a girl who's wearing baggy basketball shorts and a jersey and a backwards hat, is that appropriate dress? Is it distracting from the students? And, you know, while I want to just, you know, champion their right to express themselves at all costs, I do also see the argument that, you know, these are public schools, and if it's distracting students, maybe there should be a dress code in place. I don't know.
Is it has anyone, I mean, where are they getting this concept that it's distracting the students? Because to me that sounds like just a euphemism for the parents and teachers don't like it because
sometimes
it freaks them out.
Sometimes I think it's a way of describing that students are being harassed for what they're wearing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in that case, obviously, like, the more important problem is to stop the harassment of students. Mm-hmm. And I think that there are other ways that can be handled besides limiting, you know, what students are allowed to wear. But, like, I kind of agree with Kelsey that expressions of sexuality, I mean, like, that's the basis of a dress code, is to limit expressions of sexuality, and whether those are heteronormative expressions or cross-dressing expressions, it's hard to draw a line. But I mean, there was one principal who said in that he got a question from a teacher saying that he had a male student wearing a skirt, and he was like, should I punish him? And then the principal was like, well, is it, you know, shorter than mid-thigh, because that's our dress code? And he was like, no. And he's like, well, then it's not a problem.
And I do think that the argument could definitely be made with some of the people quoted in this article, that it is just kind of like stodgy grown-ups who can't handle it. Like,
yeah. You
know, Kay Heimowitz, a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute, says, it's hard enough to get kids to concentrate on an algorithm, even without Jimmy sitting there in lipstick and false eyelashes.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, that seems like a ridiculous argument to me, but maybe the social conservative part of me is like, you know, maybe school's not a place for tons of lip gloss and false eyelashes, whether you're a boy or a girl, or neither, or both. Like, maybe you should be put in a school uniform, because school's about learning, kids.
Yeah.
You know?
Little Jimmy.
Jimmy, take off those eyelashes. But there were a lot of there was especially, it sounds like Tucson is somehow really gender progressive in the article. They were talking about how, you know, they let students use whatever bathroom they feel most comfortable in, and they were just kind of like, oh, that's just Jack. He's not a male or a female. You know?
One problem with, I mean, not problem, but one point to note with that example of Jack was that they noted that, you know, being referred to as she and dressed like a girl, but like as a rather conservatively dressed girl, like lip gloss, flat shoes, like not high heels, not anything that...
Right, a classy broad.
Yeah, not anything that a biological female would get in trouble for wearing. So, I mean, that's something to sort of take into account, that like, you know, would schools be more open to biological males dressing as females if it were in a less flamboyant way?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either, because there was a guy in my high school who did so and got in a lot of
I think that there's a problem in that the reaction is, the question that's asked is, should I punish them? You know, like, it's not a matter of, like, what should we do about this? It's, should I punish?
Like, yeah, and I mean, I think that the idea of punishing a student for wearing something that they feel is expressing themselves is ridiculous. I mean, I think that, you know, some schools have said that they have instituted a uniform policy because they didn't want to deal with these problems, and that, I think, okay, fair enough. You know, if you want to go that far and have a uniform, that I like better as a solution than trying to police individual students based on how transgressive you think they're being. But I also don't like the idea that it feels to me, you know, that this, you know, new generation of high school students is a lot more progressive, mm-hmm. at least in some areas of the country, and that they're sort of being told that that's not the right way to think about these issues.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what I don't like, is that, you know, if the students are willing to accept people dressing, like, whichever gender they choose, then I don't like the idea of the administration stopping that. On the other hand, you know, they make the argument that students are getting harassed and it's for safety issues, and so, you know, it's complicated.
I think a lot of it depends on, like, the context of the region and if students accept it. Because if it is really not so much a distraction as a disruption in that, you know, students are harassing that person, or if a student is being harassed, then you have the problem of stopping harassment of the student and making other students not distracted in that way. But, I mean, it just seems like appeasement to say that you can't dress this way because it's bothering other people.
And it's like, well, what it's really bothering is the administration of the school.
Yeah, and I mean, like, if you dress as a girl and it's bothering someone else, why? You know, why is it bothering them? Like, maybe that's kind of another problem that needs to be addressed, is that people think it's their business.
Right, or maybe, I mean, I would hope that this could be a teaching moment in the school for why it shouldn't bother you,
right. Yeah.
You know? Instead of like, oh, go home and put on a sweatshirt because this is obscene. Maybe have a conversation like, why do you care if Jimmy has eyelashes on?
Yeah.
Let's, you know, do our algorithms.
But so we need to write an after-school special
about Jimmy's eyelashes.
Jimmy's eyelashes.
All right, well, that's as good a time as any to segue into our bitch faves. Okay, Johnanna.
This is probably myself and millions of other people, but I'm so still obsessing on Jane Lynch, and she just gets more and more awesome every minute of every day.
Jane Lynch is awesome.
She is.
My fave is, it's kind of a mixed bag fave. I'm going to go with Project Runway, just because for the second season in a row, there are 3 women in the top 3 on Project Runway, which I just think is really awesome, because the fashion industry, even though it is definitely targeting women, kind of holds up the ideas and the creativity of men above women in a lot of high fashion scenarios. And if you watch the show, you know that the 3 finalists get to show at New York Fashion Week. And so that's a great thing, that 3 women are going to be showing their collections at Fashion Week and just kind of making even that much more of a name for women in the fashion industry. On the other hand, I think this season of Project Runway has been really boring, and I don't really care who wins. I mean, I'm glad that there's 3 women in there, but honestly, I could not tell the difference between Althea, Carol Hannah, and Irina's outfits if you paid me. I could see their collections and not be able to tell who's who. I feel like it's a pretty boring season, so I don't care who wins, but I'm glad that there are women who are putting fashion out there, so.
Alright, this is a little bit of a weird one, because I know that nobody else watches the Canadian teen drama Degrassi, The Next Generation, but I do, and I love the character Declan, who is new on this season, and he's, like, this rich kid, and is kind of, like, Degrassi trying to be Gossip Girl, and he's, like, the son of a diplomat. Definitely, like, the best character to come out of the show within the past couple seasons. And he has the best eyebrows I've seen since Peter Gallagher. So,
wow.
You should watch the series, only for him. He is not featured enough, and I will make a fan video soon.
Okay, good. We'll link to all of our faves, especially those eyebrows, on the blog page. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Popaganda. For Jonanna and Sara, I'm Kelsey. And if you would like to hear more Bitch Popaganda and other audio projects, please visit bitchmedia.org/audio.